oh, I asked him, he asked me for a pair of scissors, and I said, I have a pair. And got a big joke out of the ridiculousness of the situation. You know, they loved to talk with him, and they couldn't. And they saw this, and they were at odds with themselves. So then I thought, this is completely natural. And if you can get them over the hump, as I see it, into the expression ear, then it will take its own slow progression, and I think it will run along pretty well. The steadiness, this is the way we're handling it. Now, we haven't run across the problem of steady dating, but it's a matter of time, as I see it, when they're going to progress in this affection show and this interchange of personality, you know, interpersonal relationship. And it's going, and especially the girls don't have any idea of how stimulating they can be to the boys. They don't know how easily aroused the boys are. If they must be told if they're going to be let go steady, and it's pretty tough to turn it off, I know. But Lord, they should be, no. That sitting on a boy's lap or necking in a car is terribly exciting to the boys. And it can, you know, and if they really love the boys, then they'll, and here's what a Christian idea comes in. Seems to me the control of it. If they really love the boys, then they'll see that they wouldn't treat them unkindly and put them through this difficult stress and vice versa. If you really love the girl, you wouldn't take from her something that she hopes to give to her husband, her pure self, her total self. So this is kind of the way I would teach the thing. Restrictions and breakup, I suppose, are tough. The only thing is, instead of restrictions, that's a negative, which is okay. But how about some positives? What can you substitute for these girls who want to go steady? The reason they like going steady, I think, is because they need the security. I'm talking then again back about the premarital pregnant mother and the masturbation thing, is that they need love. Now, what are the needs? So you find out what the needs are. Maybe substitute something for them. So they, you know, you go bowling with them on Friday night or whenever you want. You serve them. You find out what their needs are, so that you might be substituting, instead of saying, no, you can't go, well, what are you substituting in its place? And here's where you can get together with other couples and decide what you're going to put in its place. It might be a camping trip, it might be a boating trip, a hiking trip, a bicycle trip, all the rest. And these girls, I mentioned this to the girls the other day when we were talking after after they had been with the boys, and they said, well, you know, bicycle, I guess, but we really like to go. Well, I said, well, I'll drive you, you know, across town or out of town. And you can go on a hike or a bicycle trip away from the pressure of society because you can't be little girls. You can't be, have fun having a bicycle ride.
Thank you very much, Dan and Martel. Mr. Latha, the group I.
Our group opened with a question on the part of one of the parents regarding how you overcome the inevitable conversation that the children are going to pick up from their friends on sex, which may or may not be consistent with what you're attempting to do at home. Usually, young children's friends are fairly reliable sources of information, sometimes more reliable than the parents, so that if a child comes home with some pretty weird ideas that he has picked up, he may not discuss them with you and say, I just heard about such and such. We sort of thought that most of the kinds of information that kids pick up are the, assuming you have given them, or we have given them, proper instruction in what sex really is for and how it works, what they will then be picking up will be the eroticisms and the perversions and the things that may sound very exciting and alarming to a young child. And the question of how to handle these is not an easy one. We didn't have any easy answers, but we thought that if the parent has laid the groundwork in describing God's divine plan and why sex is what it is and why men are built the way they are and what they can expect of their bodies, then you can simply explain all of these perversions, homosexuality or misuse of sex in any way, in the same way you'd explain the misuse of any other part of your body. The example of God gave us arms and legs to do useful work with, we could conceivably use them to beat each other up and kick each other's guts out. Obviously, that's not what they were intended for. Some people may get pleasure in hurting other people. Similarly, they can get pleasure from misusing sex. We don't have a one right answer to that, but we were hoping that, assuming we've laid the proper groundwork, we can then attack that by simply referring back to what it is we said was right and describe what they are hearing in terms of perversions of that right thing. The question of four-letter words being picked up from friends at school and whether or not the child will ask, what does this mean or what does that mean? We thought it was probably useful for parents to discuss with the children when they're talking about sex in a wholesome way that it is going to be referred to in all kinds of crazy ways by the local gentry, and that's not to be alarming. It's simply that they are offending the beauty of it by referring to it that way. After the group finished at the sound of the bell, one of the participants told me that she knew of a young child who was digging a garden or something with his dad and hurt himself and shouted out a four-letter word, the famous four-letter word. And the father was just alarmed, and so subsequently sat him down and explained to him in great detail, this boy was 4 or 5 years old, exactly what all this was about. And by the way, it's not that, it's intercourse. That's the word. On another occasion, when the boy jabbed his foot with a shovel, he said, intercourse. That comes under the heading of talking about too much too soon, I guess. A very serious concern of our group was the fact that the films and most of the discussion has touched on but not adequately discussed the actual act of intercourse, that is, how you explain this to a child other than to say there's a place in mommy's body, we're a portion of daddy's body, so forth, in the abstractions. How do you actually describe the mechanics? And then that led us to the question of, do you have to describe the mechanics, or if you've gone that far, can a thinking child fill in the unsaid and know that obviously there's some active role on the part of the man and the woman? We also observed that despite our candor at these meetings on this delicate subject of sex, that when we get outside the door, the rest of our public may not be as comfortable with it. I had an uncomfortable experience at work when I thought I was doing one of my colleagues a favor by discussing how wholesome these things are, and when I just mentioned that his 2.5-year-old son ought to know that his penis is his penis, he just passed out. And then all of a sudden I had all the inhibitions I had before the series started. Therefore, when we are discussing this with our children, we thought we may as well make it clear at the outset that while we're being as frank as we are at home, father to son, father to daughter, whatever, that this is a very private, a very beautiful and holy thing, but it is personal and isn't necessary to be flaunted or discussed that openly. And don't be surprised if other children don't have your wholesome attitude or if their parents haven't taken the trouble, because unfortunately, this is a subject which too many people misunderstand. And then assuming the child knows that, he'd be better able to accept the bad information he's picking up or see what he observes as being a real lack of the understanding he thinks he has on the subject of sex. He knows now that you know that not everybody is explaining it to him or her with that much candor. Finally, we love the Walter talk, obviously. We weren't sure if there's a direct correlation between one's ease with the subject of sex education and the number of children in the family. If that's the case, many of them aren't coming anymore. We closed our session by agreeing with one or two reservations that fathers and sons should definitely hug and kiss. I still hug and kiss my dad when I see him. We don't make a scene of it, and we don't kiss on the lips, but we do, and I think that that's wholesome. I think that that establishes a kind of communication chain, because you feel that close to a mother or dad at any age, that you're probably likely to discuss more with them or feel more in touch with them than if, as soon as they're old enough to understand, you learn that you think you understand and you're not, you had your mother, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. There were some exceptions to that. One of our very active and excellent participants didn't think that was such a hot idea. But in a democracy, the will of the majority is one.
Thank you, Mr. Lazer. There is a lot of study being done now on the tactile communication, touch communication, which is a way of communicating to people. Mr. Conway, I'm very happy to hear the change in attitudes. The first meeting, everyone wanted the school to do the sex education. This is very thrilling to see the change in this area.
This is a night for jokes, and I don't have any. I'm sorry. It's tough to follow Louis. Well, our group enjoyed tonight's speakers and felt the personal experience of that much of their talk. We also agreed that we are now familiar with the correct word usage and terminology in relation to sex instruction in the family. However, there hasn't been there's been very little opportunity available for anyone in our group, at least, could use these as yet. I suppose we're all cowards. But however, maybe next week will be different. And we do have a question or two. How can one that is separated from her husband convey the beauty of sex and marriage if their life has been so unhappy? You know, we're getting into all these personal things, but this question did come up. And also, what have Mr. and Mrs. Walsh done in their neighborhood to stimulate other parents to discuss sexual instruction as they have been doing?
Thank you, Mr. Conley. Next, we have Mr. Saluka, the group. Mrs. Giselle, right? Yes.
Most of us agreed that this movie was the most suitable of all films shown for pre-adolescent girls for the simple reason that it was the most practical application of the problems they would confront in handling their first period. The only question we brought up is that somewhere along the line in the instruction, the teacher referred to the male entering in, and that was the end of it. And we felt that in a class that size, that the